Welcome to the Judaism From Within podcast. My name is Simi Lerner. The point and purpose of these discussions is to give an insight or a perspective on the weekly portion from the teachings of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, someone whose ideas and worldview I both love to teach and find personally inspiring. I hope you enjoy. In this week's discussion, we are going to discuss curses. Now, I can imagine that's not exactly the most positive way to open up a podcast, because these things come up in the Bible quite often, be it in reference to evil, or evil that will come potentially in the future. Our analysis will come on two fronts. One, the pattern, where the toichacha crops up. What I mean by that is, the patterns to the different times throughout the Bible that lists of curses, of warnings, come about. And secondly, what exactly we mean by a curse. Because at least from a personal point of view, when I hear the word curse, I think of mages, I think of wizards, witches, runes, incantations. What exactly is the Bible talking about when it says that a certain thing is cursed, or a thing will be cursed, or a curse will come about? And in our classic way, hopefully to touch upon something that often isn't touched upon, the toichacha, the rebuke, blessings and curses, something that's often shied away from. But for Rav Hirsch, this becomes a foundational pillar of our way of looking at the world. But along with an exciting discussion on curses, I'm also going to do something else new this week, something that I have not done before. We are going to be featuring a book this week. What I mean by featuring, I will be taking a novelty in reference to this week's parasha. The book I'm referring to is a book by Rabbi Shmuley Phillips, a friend of mine, originally from London and now from Jerusalem, has published a book, Judaism Reclaimed. My reason for featuring it this week is twofold. Firstly, one of his main inspirations is Rav Hirsch. But he does more than what most people do when they bring an idea from Rav Hirsch. Often people resort to simply quoting Rav Hirsch. Now don't get me wrong, there is a huge amount that can be gained from seeing what Rav Hirsch is saying over a specific idea or a specific concept, but taking it the next stage and abstracting what he's saying and allowing it to paint a broader canvas, showing a broader worldview that Rav Hirsch is offering us, is often missed. So the patterns or the paradigms Rav Hirsch is offering to us as Jews in the modern world, we don't get. This is something that Shmuley Phillips does do. The novel insights he brings from Rav Hirsch I find truly amazing. And that is one of the ideas that we are going to use in our discussion this week. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, Rabbi Shmuley Phillips has the ability within his works to be able to present a worldview using primarily Rav Hirsch and Maimonides to describe reasons for mitzvahs and rituals, give a perspective on contemporary questions, but in a balanced way. And having the ability to say, I have one view, but without the need to denigrate another view, is something that is sorely missed in this day and age of black and white and binary worldviews, where people find it difficult to be able to see the grey and the understanding that there is a complexity and subtlety in the religious life, specifically in the modern world. Shmuley Phillips manages to do this, but at the same time remain loyal to the roots of Orthodox Judaism. So without further ado, we are coming to the end of Sefer Devarim. And to really set the scene for us of this discussion on curses, Rav Hirsch draws our attention to the drama that we see at the beginning of this section. What do we have now? The Jewish people go to two mountains. On one side, some of the Jewish people stand. On the other side, the rest of the Jewish people stand. And opposite, facing each other, the Levim, the priests, the educators, stand in the middle and pronounce these blessings and these curses. Now granted, we'll describe what we mean by a curse, but just to get into the mode of what the point of this whole drama was, we had two mountains once again. Half the Jewish people on one, Har Gerizim, and half the Jewish people on the other, Har Evel. And proclaimed to them was quite literally two paths life could go down, for good or for evil, and the consequences that would follow. But the mountains too demonstrated in their very appearance this drama. On one side, lavish green, on the other side, barren. So what do we have here? Rav Hirsch says, we don't have Kohanim, or the priests of the Jewish people, standing upon the mountains, drawing curses and blessings down to the people. No, they stand within the people, with the people standing on the mountains next to them. And we get a proclamation of extreme responsibility. The Levim proclaim that you go down the road of evil, evil will fall upon you. And you go down the way of good, you will be blessed. But not only is this demonstrated by the proclamation, this is also demonstrated by the mountains themselves. Two mountains, both accessible to the same rainwater, the same pollination, and one comes about barren, and the other in blossom. The message here is very much an echo back to the Seir La'Hashem and Seir La'Azazel, two goats that were identical in every way. But their fates were so different. What was being expressed once again in symbolic drama with two goats in the desert, we see symbolized here in mountain. When we enter life, we are all at an equal plane in terms of our ability to make a moral decision. That is representative by the location being the same, but the actual manifestation upon the mountains is so different. The claim here is that that is the personification of the moral life. The decisions we make of to do good or to go down the road of evil, that we take full responsibility for. Moving on to our next stage, the appreciation of patterns and how that appreciation can bring to light messages that would otherwise be missed. I am primarily taking from the book Judaism Reclaimed, but I would encourage you to have a look at it yourself because he interplays other thinkers to bring out the messages. Now we will lower the resolution. We will look at this Teuchacha, this list of curses, in the context of the rest of the Torah. For the one that we get in this week's parasha is different than the one we get at the end of Vayikra, before the Jewish people went on their journey. But the importance of appreciating patterns really comes to light here. To see one idea in isolation, you gain, but to see an idea in context of its parallel, you gain a deeper insight, and that is what we will achieve here. We will gain a message or a warning of two ways that you can stray in the religious life. Two ways you can stray in the moral life. The first is one of religious consciousness, of how a person walks through the world, how he looks at the world and his role in the world, and on the other side, his responsibility to stay on the moral path. So what do we have? At the end of Vayikra, before the Jewish people go on their journey through the desert, Rav Hirsch very much looks at this as a training period for the Jewish people. The experiences they had with the Mon, the experiences they had with Moror, the experience they had with Amalek, all of them coming together to give a sort of crash course in how a Jewish person should walk through the world, how he should look at his material prosperity, how he should look at God's guidance and impact in his life, and how thereby he should act based off these assumptions. And the warning we get at the end of Vayikra, just before they go upon this journey, is that if you neglect this way of thinking, if you neglect this way of life, if you act in your life as if you are not in a covenantal relationship, God will reciprocate. Act in your life as if he is not there. Act in your business life as if there is no one who has an expectation of you. It will be reciprocated. For good or for bad, what happens in your life will not be under personal guidance of the Almighty. That is the claim of the first Teuchacha, of the first warning, the first curses we get at the end of Vayikra. But now we pivot to this week's parasha, the Teuchacha we get after the demonstration of the mountaintops, the two mountaintops where the Jewish people articulated themselves their responsibilities and afterwards proclaimed Amen, that they agree, that they recognize that these responsibilities upon them are binding. And there are consequences for straying from the moral life. What do they describe? What are the descriptions of how they can stray? It is the thing that really sits at the root of any social structure. The immorality and the depravity that can take place in private. To look at your friend with one face and demonstrate another. Dishonesty and cruelty, but at the same time showing a smiling, pleasant face. Both these warnings refer to the internal side of the human being. The first, how he perceives the world. The second, how he acts in the world, but not how other people see him necessarily, from the private perspective. Both these ideas share that common denominator of it being the private life. And we have two warnings. The first one, before the Jewish people went on their journey, went on this crash course for themselves and later generations. And the second, before they entered the land of Canaan to erect a state, and where the private life of the individual would spell destruction or flourishing for such a society. And now we will end off with what do we mean by a curse? But what I want to do is describe the term Oror in terms of a curse in a way that we can relate to it. We have it being brought up throughout the Bible, be it with Bilam and Balak cursing the Jewish people, or being it in this week's parasha that a person who acts in a certain way is cursed. This term Oror can be used by many different thinkers in many different ways when it comes to, I suppose, the Jewish tradition, but I find Rav Hirsch's definition of it really grounding in terms of that I actually relate to it. What I mean is that Rav Hirsch parallels it with the word bracha. A bracha, which we discussed earlier this year, is a commitment, is almost a spiritual movement to work your way towards what is right and what is true. It is to put yourself on the moral mission of the Jewish people. When we say a bracha, you're committing yourself. You are, so to speak, blessing God. Because the term bracha implies blossoming, implies vitality along a certain road. Oror is the opposite. Oror, by related roots, relates to dry, parched, empty. The sapping of energy, the sapping of vitality, of moral strength. And if we apply these two concepts to people, well, we can imagine a person whose life is a blessing. We use that in conversation. A person who's living their life in a direction that we consider noble. They are full of vitality. Their life is blossoming. But now let us put it in the other direction. Whose life is cursed? The type of person whose life and the way they live their life is draining. The way they live their life seeps their vitality from them, seeps their moral energy from them. These are the type of people who live a certain life that's described in this week's parasha. Unfortunately, we often come across such people who will show one face in public, but in private we know that their life does not mirror their public persona. The way they talk to you about other people, the way they describe how they live their life, doesn't mirror the perfect picture that they paint to other people. And in a very meaningful way, these people are cursed. But we don't have to go down the road of an incantation, or something bad will happen to them, or misfortune will befall them. No, the nature of the life they've chosen to live is one that will end in bad. It won't flourish. Expediency now and the benefit they gain or the joy they gain from another person's misfortune doesn't lead to a future that is good. It's funny, in an interesting way, this is the exact opposite of a blessing. To go on a blessing in terms of Rav Hirsch's understanding, to commit yourself to a moral mission, to commit yourself to doing something good, maybe difficult right now, but it leads to a good life. It leads to flourishing and blossoming. The opposite of an horror, of a curse, where it leads to draining, it leads to emptiness. And this is what we mean by someone is cursed. Someone who goes down this road is cursed. The description Rav Hirsch gives of the one who would never point a dagger at his friend, but in private, in conversation with other people, kills this person's happiness. And in this week's parasha, these are the types of wrongdoing that get introduced by cursed be. Once again, not necessarily in the classical sense in which we relate to cursing someone, but by the nature of the life they have chosen to live. Taking us back to that first point, we all have these two mountains in front of us, and we can all choose how to act in our lives. And the person who sits across from you, and as the Pasuk says, cursed is the person who strikes his neighbor down in private, who smiles and tells you of the misfortune or the embarrassment or the secret of their friend. You know this person who is telling you this is empty inside. A person who lives this sort of life, the two-faced life, they are cursed by their nature of the life they've chosen to live. So we had our 3 points. The first one, the two mountains, and the declaration of responsibility articulated by the Kohanim as representatives of the people. We then describe the two internal religious aspects that are being described in the two rebukes, in the two versions of blessings and curses, and how they both reflect a different aspect of the religious life. And lastly, we gave a dimension to how we can understand a curse, the draining of the individual, a person turning the core of who he is into a husk, draining the moral vitality, draining the joy and the happiness that life can produce, trading that in for expediency and the misfortune of others. Our circumstances can be different. We are all put on the world, and we are all faced with a decision. And we blossom or we don't blossom. The metaphor of blossoming parallels the word oror and bracha. One represents parched, dry, desolation. The other one represents blossoming. But unlike on the mountain when it was on a physical level, for us it is in a moral dimension. A dimension of vitality, a dimension of how we live our lives. Thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful Shabbos.